This is the Revitalize My Church podcast, created to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. This episode is hosted by the Executive Director of Assist Church Expansion, Nathan Bryant, and his ministry colleague, Bart Blair.
Well, this is the 27th episode of the Revitalize My Church podcast. My name is Bart Blair, and I am joined by the Executive Director of Assist Church Expansion, Mr. Nathan Bryant. Good day, Nathan.
Good day, Bart.
We sound like Australians. Good day. I don't know why.
I'd love to go.
I've never been to Australia, and I don't usually say good day. But today, it is a good day. I'm glad to be online with you. For those who are our regular listeners, you may have noticed a little gap in our podcast release schedule. So on the upside, we have completed a whole year of podcasts. We set out in 2024 we started this podcast in July of 2024. We released two episodes a month, one on the 1st and one on the 15th of the month, and even one bonus episode in the middle there over the course of those 52 weeks. And then we came to a screeching halt. We just got so busy, we ran out of time to do recording. So here we are. We took the month of July off of 2025. Here we are, the month of August. Yeah, no episodes in the month of August. But as of September 1st, which is when this episode will drop, we're back in the saddle, I will say. We're back in the saddle. And we're going to pick up right where we left off in our previous podcast episodes. We've been recording episodes covering a list of what I'll call essentials for church revitalization. We got this list from the North Carolina Baptists. They put this list together, and Terry Long is the guy who we got this list from, and so we give a shout out to Terry every time we do this. And we've been covering some essentials that are really, really important. I guess they're really, really essential for an effective church revitalization, because our goal, our hope with this podcast is really to help churches pivot, to revitalize, to refresh, to renew, to have a healthy and vibrant future. And up to this point, you and I have had conversations on the first six that Terry puts in his list. The first is dependent prayer, and the second is Christ-centered worship, and those are both covered in one previous episode. Then we talked about text-driven preaching and intentional discipleship. Those were packaged together in one episode. And then the last one you and I recorded together was on gospel-centered fellowship and missional engagement. And so that's two episodes ago, whatever the numbers were, 25. That was episode 25. Today, we're going to be talking about two other topics. One is joyful hospitality, and one is meaningful membership. And I think that this is important because as you and I walk into a lot of churches that are in need of a renewal, a refresh, or a revitalization, they're all exercising something that they might label as hospitality, and they all have something that they refer to as membership. But I think we could argue that they're not always joyful hospitality, and it's not always meaningful membership. So I'm going to let you unpack your thoughts on those two topics today, Nathan, and pivot or point them towards how you think these help in a church revitalization scenario. Let's start with joyful hospitality. Number one, why is it important for a church to have hospitality or be hospitable in the first place?
Well, it's so important. You're coming into the house of God, you're meeting God's people, and for some people, it's their first time ever coming into that environment. And so they're scared. I always tell people, you know, for us who go to church every Sunday, it's been part of our culture, part of our past, part of our experience, part of what we do, and the people that we know, it's really comfortable. But for someone who hasn't gone to church maybe in 15 or 20 years, or has never been in a church ever before, that's their first experience coming into this strange place that they have so many presuppositions about, meeting strange people who are not sure what they're going to do, how they're going to be treated, what's going to happen. You know, they don't know they're going to be like taken in a back room. They don't know what's going to take. They don't know anything is going to happen here. So, you know, and having people, when you walk in the room, like I was just at the church just this Sunday, fantastic. The lady was happy to be there. She welcomed me with a big smile and asked me what my name was. And she wasn't overly audacious. She was just really genuinely happy to be there and happy to see me. And I was like, wow, this is really nice. I've been to many, many a church where nobody even said boo to me at all. There was nobody at the door. There's nobody in the lobby. I didn't even know where to go. I walk in the church. I'm like, okay. And I'm a person who, you know, is comfortable in church. But I was like, I don't know where to go or what to do and, you know, where I'm supposed to be. And I don't know if I'm sitting in somebody's chair. So I think the first impression that somebody has is the personal impression, not just, you know, they're going to have a building when they walk and they see the building. That's certainly really important. But what people are really looking for is connection and acceptance. And in if there's a person there who's, I'm viewing near the bulletin or, you know, whatever, giving you the eye or looking you up and down, looking like they didn't want to, they just got there as fast as they could and didn't actually want to be there, you know? Mm-hmm. So this idea of joyful, I think, really helps to animate the kind of way that we want to operate. And of course, we represent Jesus and the joy of the Lord is our strength. We want to give a sense that we are excited to be in God's house with God's people. And excited about what God will do and to be together. So this joyful hospitality, I think, is really, really important, especially, well, in many, many different ways. So I want to talk about a couple of different ways, Bart, I think about when I think about joyful hospitality. One is, of course, the front greeting experience, which I think a lot of people are thinking when they think joyful hospitality. But also, I think more corporately across the church, how are we thinking about we're hosting people who maybe this is their first experience and we're the host. They're coming to our place, our church, our building. How are we thinking about that? And how are we actually hosting people when they come? Not just, okay, they showed up. Great. And we gave them a warm welcome when they walked in the door. Fantastic. But, you know, they don't know where to go. They don't know what's happening. What's going to go on with their kids? And like, what does this room look like? And, you know, when people come to my house, I think about this a lot because COVID was so crazy in Canada, such restrictions. Nobody came over for quite a while.
Yeah.
So when we first had a family come over to visit us, you should have seen the work that we were doing to clean the house, places that hadn't been touched for quite a while. And we were working hard to get everything worked. Why? Because you wanted to be hospitable to people who were coming into our home. And so there's this sense about hospitality corporately in terms of the building and the space and even the way that we were thinking about how we're going to engage people. We thought about the food we're going to get, you know, feed people when they came into our home. So we're thinking about all these things. So I think that's one piece of the hospitality side. The other side, I think, is actually an even more powerful sense of hospitality is when you come to a church and you start to actually engage people and they actually want to invite you into their life. They want to give you space. They want to give you room. They're not just saying hi cordially and hope you don't talk to them. They're actually engaging you. And if you come for some time, maybe they're going to take you out to lunch or have you over to their house, or you're doing stuff that's allowing people to have space in your life. And I really encourage the leadership team that's taking on the role of revitalizing their church to also bring it hospitality beyond the building, but actually personally. How are you inviting people into your home? In fact, the scripture is replete with we must be given to hospitality, especially elders and deacons, people who are leading in the church. This should be marking their life. And when you actually are thinking about how are we going to grow this thing, how are we going to move forward? Well, the primary way you're going to do that is through relationships and connecting with people. And if you're not willing to have people in your home, people in your life, then you're going to have a really hard time revitalizing and restarting a church or even doing significant ministry in a long-term way, because that just really sets a different tone altogether. When the people of your church see you opening up your home and having people over and doing stuff, they'll open up their homes and they'll start doing it too. And when you start to have real community, real connections beyond just the corporate experiences happening on Sunday morning, it's a big deal. So I think when I think of joyful hospitality, I think of, you know, the initial engagement people have with the church body on their first contact. And then the corporate experience that people are, that you're producing for hosting people and giving them kindness and doing it in a joyful manner. But I also think about it on the private and personal level with the people in the church, and especially leaders of the church, of being very, very joyful to be hospitable to everybody who's coming and to the people who are there. It's a huge, huge, huge piece of successful ministry.
In most cases, it's a cultural shift that has to happen in the church. And a lot of times that cultural shift has to start at an individual level before it can morph to a corporate level. As you were sharing those things, there were a couple of sort of memories that came to my mind. I think a lot of churches that have been in decline for a long time or have been stagnant and they haven't seen new guests on a regular basis, they end up over time probably inadvertently downplaying the importance of hospitality. You know, when the only people who are in your home are the people who live in your home, you don't really think about rolling out the red carpet for the people who live in your home. But if there is a perpetual expectation that there are going to be new people walking in on a regular basis and that they're going to be sharing a meal with you or watching a sporting event with you or having a barbecue or just having a tea or coffee with you, then your level of hospitality comes up. And, you know, my wife and I, we look at this very differently. She's willing to open our front door to anyone, any day, anytime, regardless of what the state of the kitchen is, how much laundry there is hanging out on the couch that needs to be folded. She doesn't care.
Which is awesome, Bart. I got to tell you.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Now, you know me. It kills me. But I also recognize that what she's doing out of love and out of sincerity. And if it doesn't bother her and it doesn't bother the person who's coming over to hang out with her, I just have to suck it up, buttercup. You know, that's just the way it's going to be. But I do remember, I was flashing back to very early in our marriage, over two decades ago, we were going to host an open house around Christmas time in our neighborhood. We were living there in Mississauga, not too far from you and Jennifer. And Elizabeth, my wife, bakes, and she baked all this stuff. And we put out all these invitations to all these people in our neighborhood. And we sat in our house that evening during this open house, and not a single person showed up. And it was crushing. Like, it was soul crushing. We didn't understand why no one came. We just wanted them to come and just, you know, have a cookie, have a cupcake, a muffin, whatever, and just Merry Christmas with each other. And no one showed up. And, you know, when you do that, and if you do it repeatedly and people don't show up, you tend to start thinking that it's not an important thing to do. But my wife and I, in perseverance, you know, we continued to do that. And now we have people in our home all the time, scheduled and unscheduled, because we've just kind of pushed through the pain of, hey, you know, sometimes people just don't show up. But when it comes to your Sunday morning worship gathering, I think as a church, you can't let the fact that there aren't new people deject you and prevent you from being prepared for new people. There's not a single pastor that I know who, at least those that we're working with that are working towards revitalization, who aren't praying every single week that God would bring somebody new into their church.
Absolutely.
They alone can't be the one to be a person with joyful hospitality. They need their church. They need their team. They need their family to do that as well. And I just one other quick little side story here. You may have actually heard this. I may have shared this at a boot camp one time. But, you know, when we were we planted our church up in Alberta, we were meeting in a movie theater. And one of the things that really irritated me over time, and I began to kind of come down on our church family pretty hard about it, was that our church people were all sitting in the back rows of the movie theater,
which meant when new
people, when new people came in, new people inadvertently almost always came in late, they had to walk down the aisles to the front. And I was like, okay, from now on, the back four rows are not for you. You can't sit in the back rows. And I use this story. I had a work colleague years and years ago before I went into ministry who, this is like late 90s, early 2000s when big screen TVs were just kind of becoming a big deal.
Okay.
And he and his wife had this other couple that invited them over to watch the Super Bowl. And they get to this couple's home and they've got four chairs in their living room. They have two big recliners sitting right in the middle of the room facing the great big screen TV. They're like if you're a Friends watcher, they're like the Joey Chandler recliners right in front of the TV. And then they had two little puny like folding chair things off to the side. And when they went in to watch the Super Bowl, the hosts took the two big recliners,
the nice cushion
and put their guests, my friends, in the side chairs off to the side so they could barely actually see the TV. And I never forgot that story because I thought, that's about as non-Jesus-like as I can ever imagine. But it happens every Sunday in our churches.
For lots of places,
Our regular people take the best seats. They don't leave the best seats for the guests. And that's something I think, man, if you can change that one little habit in your church, you know, you and I both preach in churches often that are not even close to being at capacity in attendance. And that's putting it nicely, right?
Lots of space.
And there won't be anybody sitting in the first five or six rows of the congregation. The majority of people are sitting in the back three or four or five rows. And I'm like, you know, couldn't we just move up a little bit, just a few rows, and give those back rows for the people who are new, who might be coming in late? Anyway, that's do it with joy, though. Don't do it with bitterness. There you go. That's all I got.
Yeah, I would
say
also
that.
What happens to lots of churches is which is wonderful, but people know each other and they love each other and they're connected to one another. And so what happens is usually in the beginning of the church and after the church service, people go to their holy huddles and they are connected and they're connecting with one another. But what happens to that is that the person who's new, they don't know what to do and they feel really on the outside and not accepted. And I don't think people are intentionally ignoring the people that are new, but they're not actually thinking of themselves as actually hosting them.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can get our people to think, oh, I'm actually hosting this new person and we're actually working together to get new people to come and we're so excited they're here. Now, we don't want to like overwhelming like scare people away because we're just too crazy. But we do want to have a different perspective on what we're doing as we're engaged. It doesn't mean I don't want you to socialize with your friends at church. Absolutely. Of course, we want a fellowship and do that. But maybe we can invite them to connect them and get to know their name and introduce them to other people. And we're just thinking about how we're taking on the role of hosts and we're taking on the role of thinking about hospitality. And we're doing it with joy and kindness and grace. This person's not in your way. They're not a problem. I remember going to a church once and sitting in actually kind of the middle back row. And I was sitting there and about 2 minutes before the service came over, this young guy came up to me. He says, yeah, I'm really sorry, but that's my grandma's chair. And she's been sitting there for 25 years.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm like, which was totally fine with me. Like, I don't care. But I'm thinking, like, if this was a new person, first time ever coming to church, it'd be horrible. Right. So anyway.
I was listening to a podcast just a few weeks ago, and I wish I could remember which one it was, but it was a pastor who was sharing something that he implemented in his church during a season of revitalization, and he called it the 3-minute rule. And the 3-minute rule was, for the first 180 seconds after the final amen, you are not allowed to talk to anybody that you knew. You had to go and find somebody that you didn't know. And as the church grew, of course, that became a lot easier to do because there were more and more people right. coming that you didn't know. But he said it went from like literally they'd have a new family or a couple new families or new people that would show up. And all of a sudden there'd be a line after the service with everybody wanting to meet the new people. And I think that's better to happen after the service than it is before the service.
Totally.
I think it can be a little awkward for people when they first come in and they're like mobbed, like, oh, new people, let's go check them out. I think it's better to kind of, to really gently allow them to, it's actually more hospitable to let them acclimate slowly as they come in, but not let them leave without being noticed. That, I think, is the most important piece.
The other thing I think too, Bart, you know, back in the day when I was growing up, because I'm old, and I grew up in a small country church, the pastor would always greet you on the way out the door, right? Give you a handshake. Every time you left the church, the pastor wouldn't stay in the front of the building. He would go to the back of the church and he'd shake the hand of every family that left the church.
Yep.
And because it was his way of having touch with you every Sunday and look at you. And I think, you know, what's interesting, you know, the person that person is connected with the most usually on a Sunday morning experience is the pastor, because they hear him preach for 30 minutes or 40 minutes, whatever long he spoke for. And they made some kind of connection through him. And the person they're most interested in meeting, guess what? Is the pastor.
Yeah. And the
person
they're
most intimidating, the most intimidated talking to is the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important to think about that as, and of course, as a pastor, you want to do it too. But if you had some way that you did it that's comfortable for you, but you're thinking about how am I making myself available to the new people after the service in a way that's meaningful and real and not too uncomfortable.
Yeah, I have a church that we are coaching that I have preached at a couple of times, and they do that every Sunday. And I referred to that as the join it line. It's when people come by and they shake your hand and they go, join it, pastor. Join it, pastor.
They all have to say how good the message was.
Yeah. But what I used to do in the last church that I was pastoring, and this worked really well, was I would get to the end of the service and I would just announce, hey, if you're new, I'm going to hang out here in front of the stage for the next 3 to 5 minutes. And if I haven't met you yet, I would love for you to come and introduce yourself to me. What that did was it gave them a clear set of directions, new people, clear set of directions on how they could meet me. It also signaled to the people who were regulars that I was reserving that time for those first 3 to 5 minutes after the service for people who were new. And I really
like that.
It's one of the best ways for me to make connections with new people.
I prefer it when they do that to the side or back, because usually that person has to walk all the way to the front. So, but I love that idea. But you're right. One of the big problems that happens after church is everybody wants to talk to the pastor about whatever issue they're got going on in their family, which is sometimes really important stuff. But they can dominate the pastor's engagement, so he can have no access to talk to the new people.
Yeah, it made in our context and in different churches, I've talked to other pastors about doing this. It makes sense to do it down at the front because most of the people are making a beeline for the back. So all your regulars, like, they're headed up. Let's just face it, they're headed for the back doors most of the time. They're not. Yeah. They're headed out the back of the sanctuary to the parking lot, and so bringing the newcomers down front prevented me from being at that back door in the line of fire of everybody that was coming out because everybody else was moving the opposite direction. Okay, we need to pivot our conversation. This is good. We could talk about that a lot more, I'm sure.
Well, especially on the personal level. I mean, I know we didn't get into that too much, but I really think that is the life-changing dynamic of not just the experience people are having Sunday, but they're actually moving into relationships. And when you can actually host people in your home and connect with people in that way, you're doing something significantly and meaningful to moving that relationship forward and have an opportunity for the gospel to have time to work with people.
Yeah, there are a whole whack of books on Christian hospitality and how we can be better neighbors to the people that God has brought into our lives. Two that come to my mind, one of them is Making Room for Life by Randy Frazee. That one's a little older. I know you're familiar with that one. The other one is The Art of Neighboring by Dave Runyon. Yeah. I'll link to both of those in the show notes, as well as a couple of others that I can visualize the covers of them, but I can't actually think of the names off the top of my head. But there are actually some really good books on how to cultivate a culture of hospitality in your church that's not just based around the corporate idea that when people come to church, we are hospitable, but that we're living lives that have an open front door and we're inviting people into our lives, into our homes. Some people have a really difficult time with that. I recognize that not everybody is in a place where they're comfortable or able to bring people into their home. But that doesn't mean that you can't be hospitable in inviting people into your life and find other creative ways of doing that. So big cultural shift.
Or even partnering with someone who is great at that.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
I know people who wouldn't say boo to anybody, but they love people come over, but they won't invite them. But then the other couple would never have anybody in their home, but they're very happy to invite you to them.
Yeah, also, exactly.
Because they're good friends. And they do it, this team effort. They do it together. And it's awesome. Anyway.
Yeah. Next point that we're going to discuss today, and the last point we're going to discuss today, is meaningful membership. Depending on the church context, most churches, I would say, that we engage with have some kind of formal membership in the church. I know that not all churches have formal membership, but a lot of churches do. If you don't have formal membership, maybe this conversation will give you some ideas about how you might implement that. Or if you have membership that doesn't really mean anything, maybe this conversation will help you rethink what you need to do with your membership in your church to make it more meaningful. Nathan, why don't you speak to some of your experience?
And I would say a lot of the newer churches don't have anything with membership or very little. And I think it's very problematic. To me, you don't have a church, in my opinion, unless you have biblical leadership, biblical teaching, commitment to the mission, of course, commitment to Jesus in salvation, but also commitment to one another. And if you're not committed to one another, in my opinion, you're not a church. And I think that's backed up by the New Testament scripture. So this idea of being committed to one another is really, 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 I think, really important. But also, what does it mean to be committed? What does it mean to be a member of this church? A lot of guys or church leadership hasn't really thought about that besides, they vote at the annual meeting if that's how your structure is or some other thing. But other than that, there's nothing. And oftentimes there's the church I grew up in, there was, because we were a Baptist church, there was this big deal about, you had to have this theological positions, all this stuff to become a member. Then once you were a member, there was nothing required of you at all. And nobody even knew if you even were around, and you were allowed to vote once in a while, but that was it. So I think having clarity on what does it mean to be a member, committed, a partner to this church experience is so critically important. When a person comes to know Jesus as their savior, they become part of God's family. And that family obligation is not optional. It's something that is actually in the church is Jesus's idea, is God's idea. And it's what Jesus is doing. The church is God's vehicle to accomplish his mission in this era. And so for people not to be invited into partnership, into membership, into commitment to his body, to his family, I think is a big mistake and it's a big problem. I think people are looking at this kind of interesting, you know, you can get a family to commit for that 1 year commitment and all the money and the hours to go to softball or baseball for little Johnny, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning. Hey, commit to coming to church on Sunday morning and being in a group and serving someplace. Well, you're asking way too much, but hey, for little Johnny, we're going to go 5 days a week, 6 o'clock in the morning and every evening. So it's really fascinating to me. People are really scared about this idea of getting commitment, but commitment's really, really important. But I would say also, what does it mean to be a member of this church? What are we asking for? What does it look like? How do we define it? What are the benefits of being a member, but also what are the obligations of this commitment that we're making to one another?
Yeah, it's not uncommon for us to go into churches that, you know, are averaging, you know, 25 to 50 people in attendance on a Sunday morning. They have, you know, 60 or 70 or 80 members on their roll. And when I ask the pastor, what are the expectations of members? There's a blank stare because there is no expectation of a member. And I use the term a covenantal commitment. As the pastor of the church, I think you or whoever the pastor is, you are making a covenantal commitment to lead, shepherd, disciple, care for the people that God has brought into your flock, to use the term as we often do. But I also think that there ought to be covenantal commitments for the people in the church to the rest of the body and to the leaderships, And I'm gonna share. I have several churches that I've been working through their membership covenants and a basic class for what is a membership class. And I'm gonna share that template in the show notes of this particular podcast episode. So if somebody is looking for just, hey, a starting point, you can download it. It'll be, you know, just kind of a generic thing, but it'll kind of give you some key points. There's also a really good book by Tom Rainer called I Am a Church Member. A lot of churches I know will literally use that book as their membership class. It's like, okay, read these. It's got like 6 things, 10 things that are things that members ought to do. And members ought to do things like show up on Sundays, serve in a ministry, be in a small group, support the church financially. I always include, they ought to be investing in relationship with people who don't yet know Jesus. I also put in there that they need to respect the position of the pastors and elders or leaders that God has placed over that church as their spiritual authority during the time that church is going to be their home church. Here's the other thing that we recognize is that people move around a lot more today than they used to. So it used to be, back in my grandparents were members of the same church for 40 years, 50 years. You know, a lot of the churches that we go into have people that have been members of those churches for 40 or 50 years. But these days, people move every 3 to 5 years. And I think there's something about that idea of making a covenantal relationship with the church and signing this membership covenant that kind of makes them feel like they're stuck. They're committing to something and it's a forever thing.
But we also live in a very individualistic world that doesn't want commitment. And so people don't want to be under authority. They don't want to be committed and have obligations to other people. And they see, a lot of people see church as something that they're trying to do. And it's kind of something they'll do on the side as opposed to like, no, I'm actually a believer and follower of Jesus. Jesus is the center of my life and my commitment to him and to his family and to his mission is actually priority. And so I think part of this membership conversation actually helps to make that alignment for people, that this is a value proposition within our community of faith, community of followers of Christ. That's really important, that we don't think that it's enough to say, I follow Jesus, but I'm not committed to him nor his people. That's not a full sense of what this means to be a follower of Christ. So I think that the more clear someone can have on membership for the church family, I think it's really, really helpful to kind of set the standard or the bar of what it means to be a healthy follower of Jesus in this place. You know, there are four systems that we're trying to get people to build, or strategies that we're trying to get people to think about. Is what's our plan to reach the lost? What's our plan to integrate those people into our church family? What are we doing to actually help them become healthy followers of Christ? And then how do we identify, train, and mobilize leaders? Those four systems. But this, the kind of the culmination of the second one is how is a person fully integrated into our church family? Well, they become a member, right?
Right.
So that membership concept becomes really clarifying for what we're moving people towards, and also standard bearing for what we're asking people in this community. We're setting the norms in this cultural community of faith. The church is saying, hey, if you want to be part of our family, this is what it means, is we're asking of you. And it's actually awesome. It's not a burden that you must endure to be part of the team. It's actually exciting that we together get to do this, and we actually own the same commitments together as we follow and walk with Jesus.
As we are leading people to faith in Jesus, one of the things that we recognize is that the moment that they say yes to being a disciple of Jesus, a follower of Jesus, that's not the end game. That's the beginning of the race. A lot of times what's happened in churches is we've created this membership, and membership is the finish line. It's okay, they became a member and their name goes in the membership rolls, and that's it. Where we see it is, we're actually, I mean, some churches even use different terminology for membership, such as partners or stakeholders, right? I like the
or
term
teammates.
Stakeholders, yeah. Or team, yeah. Right? Team members. Mm-hmm. Because what that does is it indicates that you're actually not, you haven't reached the finish line, you're actually committing to something new. And that something right. new is going to involve participation going forward. And so what we're doing as the leadership is we're establishing what that activity is going forward, what the expectations right. are. The benefits are that if you're a covenantal member of this church, you're going to get the time and the attention and the effort from the pastor, from the elders, from the spiritual leaders of the church, because they have an obligation to you. If you yeah. are a covenantal member, you get that attention. And if you're not a covenantal member, I'm not saying that pastors won't and shouldn't give people attention.
Right.
But I start asking the question is, if you haven't really demonstrated a full level of commitment to our church, how far can we bend to help you, to serve you, to minister to you, especially as the church grows and we've got all of our energies and our resources and things being pulled in different directions? I think we have to prioritize those that have said, this is my family and I'm going to participate.
On the other side too, Bart, like, how do we have people serve in the church who aren't committed to it?
Right.
I mean, it's one thing to have them serve, I call it entry-level service space, which is fantastic. It's the way of connecting them and moving them forward in their journey. But how do we have them leading others in the church, and they're not committed to the church? They have no membership. There's no commitment
right.
to the church leadership, to the church theology, to the church as a whole, to the church philosophy. There's no commitment. So how do we let them lead? Like, so membership will help to clarify and to set the bar, to create a better norm. And that's why I think it's really important for church leaders, leadership teams, to think through, what does membership look like in our church? What are we going to ask for that? And how does that play into the disciple we're trying to make by Jesus, by the grace of God, and the kind of church we're trying to create by God's grace to honor Jesus in this place? And so when that all comes together and that language and those ideas are culminated through this membership pathway that you create, or the way that you create membership, then you can constantly be lifting that standard and celebrating it. This is a member of our church. This is somebody who has committed their life to Jesus and committed to each of us, that we can do this together on this journey that we have, that Jesus has for us. And I think that's something to celebrate, to honor, and to always elevate those mores that you're stating are, this is what we expect of others in this community, by declaring what membership is and then talking about it regularly.
I do want to put one little caveat here, because if you do download our membership class, this template that I've created in this membership covenant, one of the things that you as a pastor might notice is missing in that is that there isn't a lot of requirement for theological alignment specifically. And the reason I say that is because while we always include a copy of our doctrinal statement in our membership documents, when we're inviting someone to be in a member, the reality is when we are doing our job of making new disciples and we're integrating them into our church, many of the people that are going to be coming into membership are still wet behind the ears from their baptism. They don't know anything other than Jesus died on the cross to pay the penalty of their sin, and they can be restored into a relationship with God through their faith in right. Jesus Christ. And that might be the depth of their theological framework. And so we're not going to put a whole lot of theological barriers in front of them. We do give them a copy of our doctrinal statement and say, this is who we are, and this is what we believe. And over time, we're going to disciple you in all these areas so that you understand what they mean and how they affect our walk with Jesus. But right here and right now, you're saying, yes, I'm saved. We believe you're saved. You're saying, I'm going to covenant with this family to learn, to grow, to be the disciple that God's called me to be. And I have no idea what the word eschatology means, but you've got this whole document on it.
But we are going to walk in harmony with this, with this document, and we're not going to, you know, go against the teachings of the church or the leadership of the church, right? So we're committing, even though we may not even understand
100%. 100%. So we also in this particular document, we've kind of left out like church mission, vision, and values and those sorts of things, because in our discipleship pathway that we typically create, we actually address those earlier in the assimilation process and not necessarily at the membership level. Again, when I come, I tell pastors this often, that you've worked really hard to come up with a clear purpose statement and a set of core values. And the reality is the new person who's just come to faith in Jesus doesn't really care about all that stuff. They just want to know, how can I get plugged in and where should I go and what should I do? The churched person who's coming to your church, they need to know and understand your theology. They need to know and understand what your purpose is and what your core values are. And so we kind of hit those things a little bit earlier in our discipleship pathway to give people a chance to opt out before they even get into the membership class. So, hey, if you're not aligned with us theologically, you come from a church background, or you don't buy into our vision, our values, our ministry philosophy, we want you to opt out before you come into the membership class so as to not waste your time. So that's an intentional thing for us. You don't have to do it the way that we do it, but that's the way that we do it.
Yeah, and that every church is free to do it however they want to. And like, and if you have a strong system of how you're discipling people beyond membership, then membership isn't the final goal. It's just a piece towards it. But you're trying to get that commitment, I would say, sooner than later. You know, once you identify the person's a believer, or they've been baptized as a believer, and they are aligned with you, or at least in agreement as much as they know, we want to move them to commitment to God's church as soon as we can. I think it's really important that we get teammates working together to accomplish the mission of God, that are committed to one another and to Christ and to his word and to his mission. So really, really important.
Well, we should wrap this up because that was a lot. Nathan, it's always a blast to talk about these things with you. And I'm hoping that those that have listened or who watched this on our YouTube channel have found this content to be helpful. Please make sure that if you are enjoying this podcast, if you found it to be helpful or useful, that you're sharing it with other people. You can share it on your socials, email, or text the link to friends or other ministry colleagues or people that you know. We've gotten some really positive feedback lately about the podcast, but by and large, our audience is still relatively small, and we love to grow that audience, not so much for our sake, but because we really, really do have a heart to help the local church. If we can be a help to the local church through our discussions and the content that we share, we definitely want to do that. I'll also remind you that if you haven't subscribed wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, make sure that you do that so that you don't miss any future episodes. With that, on behalf of Nathan, I'm Bart. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Revitalize My Church podcast.